Coming up on Chasing the Natty, what an incredible week of college football we got to enjoy yesterday. While everyone else is recovering, you all are here getting ready to and set for another week of college fantasy football, pouring hours of research into your waiver wire pickups. Well, if you've come here, you've come to the right place. As always, we'll be tackling the disappointing players and what to do with them moving forward. We'll talk about some of the big week six performers that you should probably avoid on the waiver wire this week, and then we'll get to the part you're all dying to hear about, the players you could be adding to your roster that'll help you win your league down the line. We've got all of that and more coming right after this. This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. Hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday and Wednesday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campusofcanton.com. Subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We got content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devy, C2C, College IDP, College DFS. Really, if you play it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. If you guys have not already, make sure you show us some love by leaving a like, a comment, and a subscribe. If you're on the YouTube side of things, if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you leave a 5-star review. Make sure you're following the show wherever you are listening. Not only does that show us some support, but you're also helping the game of college fantasy football in general. So if y'all can do those little things, I would greatly appreciate it. So y'all, wow. I don't know about you guys. I'm still recovering from Saturday in terms of just the sheer amount of craziness that we got. My dogs somehow managed to avoid all that. And I think it has to do with the fact that we didn't play at Auburn, because I feel like if we were at Auburn, given the voodoo that was surrounding everything yesterday, that Georgia absolutely would have gone down had we been playing in Jordan-Hare. But Alabama losing to Vanderbilt, I don't think anybody ever saw that coming. The cult of Diego Pavia is now live and strong throughout the rest of college football. Of course, us CFF folks have been a part of the Pavia cult for a year now, given what he was able to do at New Mexico State last year, finishing as a top 24 quarterback for college fantasy purposes. I thought that Pavia would be interesting going to Vanderbilt, but I just couldn't get it out of my head. I'm like, yeah, I thought the same thing about AJ Swan. I'm like, okay, AJ Swan could be decent at Vanderbilt, but then that never really panned out. I should really, really learn to take advantage of the fact that quarterbacks who follow their offensive coordinator and also their head coach, who is also a offensive analyst there at Vanderbilt, that's a recipe for success, and they know their systems pretty well and enough to take down Alabama last night. And of course, they were the only ones. Tennessee going down on the road in Arkansas, which, man, I'm not gonna wonder that aloud, but I guess I will. But like, I do want to put the question out there of like, we all love Josh Heupel's system, and like on paper, right, everywhere he's gone, he's had an incredible offense. So I do think it is mostly up to do with him. But do we think that loss of Alex Golish at offensive coordinator was a bigger loss than we were initially kind of letting on? Because right now, Tennessee's offensive identity just doesn't look very strong, really, the past 2 years. Like last year, they were having troubles as well, just trying to get the offense going with Joe Milton. I don't know if they're still trying to chase what they did with Hendon Hooker, and they don't have the pieces for that kind of offense again. But like right now, just a disappointing offense just for fantasy purposes and also just offense in general. Let's see, what other things went down yesterday? Obviously, Michigan and USC went down. Obviously, big. I mean, shoot, USC dropped out of the top 25 today. Michigan almost dropped out of the top 25. I think AP voters are a little done with both of those programs right now. Miami almost went down, but thanks to some last-minute heroics by the refs, the Hurricanes, they managed to pull that out. But again, I feel like I'm missing a big one. Missouri. Missouri got absolutely thrashed, which, again, let's be real, they were only still in the top 10 because of preseason expectations, right? Like, if you look at the actual body of their work, they were not a top 10 team to begin with. But, you know, good on A&M for completely thrashing them at home. Anyway, that's enough recap of just football in general. You guys know all that. You guys watched all those games. You're here to learn about the fantasy impacts of everything like that. So we'll get right to it. You guys know the drill here. By this point, we're 6 weeks into this. But just for those of you who might be joining us, might be finding this channel right now, at this point in the season, basically what we do every Monday here is we will go through, one, the candidates for the freakout list. These are usually players that got drafted highly in the preseason, or we have been relying on them the past couple of weeks and they're on a bit of a downslope. You guys send us the requests as to who should be put on the freakout list this week, and myself, Nate Marquise, and Chris K will all rate those players on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of how much we are freaking out over them right now. So we'll get to that. We got two players on that list today. And then I will go through a list of five players that scored very highly this past week. But I will tell you that just in the name of college fantasy, sometimes a player can score very highly and they are just not worth picking up whatsoever. And so I got five players I will tell you to avoid this week on my waiver wire traps segment. And then we'll get to the last part where you guys are going to want to hear about the players who will actually make an impact positively for your fantasy teams moving forward. So with that being said, I'm not putzing around anymore. Let's go ahead and hit up these freakout list candidates. Wrong page, Jerry. Let's hit up the right page. There we go. All right. Freakout list time. We got two candidates on the board this week. Didn't really have a ton of requests for this week. I think most people have kind of figured out, you know, either on their own or, you know, the players that we thought were going to be good didn't end up being good. We have already discussed. I try not to put the same players on here over and over again. If I do put a player on here, I try to make sure there's at least been 2 weeks in between so that we can get a true actual update on our feelings over it. Although I probably could put on a couple of candidates that we've had on here in terms of, you know, them trending positively. Like, we told you guys not to freak out about them, and guess what? It turned out great. Like, one that comes to mind is Ricky White. Ricky White's been absolutely awesome for UNLV the past couple of weeks. Now, granted, got a little lucky on that in terms of, you know, Matthew Sluga just all of a sudden dropping out of the team entirely, and Haj Malik Williams, excuse me. I don't know why I glitched so much there. Haj Malik Williams coming in and just being an overall better passer than Sluka was, and that's helped out Ricky White a ton. And so, you know, lots of good things with the freakout list scale over the last couple of weeks. Our two candidates for today are, one, Elik Iomanure, the wide receiver out of Stanford, a guy that was being drafted in the top 4 or 5 rounds of leagues. And then Jalen Buckley, running back out of Western Michigan. Two guys on here for almost totally different reasons. Not totally different reasons, but like they're both disappointing. That's the whole reason why most people requested them to be on here. But they're very much two different cases here. We'll start with Elik Iomanure. Last couple of weeks been pretty disappointing for Iomanure. He's had 87 yards versus Syracuse. He has 50 yards versus Clemson, 33 yards versus Virginia Tech. He's had a touchdown in all three games. But man, if he didn't have those touchdowns, we'd be looking at a massive underperformance for Iomanure. Iomanure, since the start of the season, has had 100-yard game. The production just has not been here for him to be an elite option. His highest fantasy total so far this year came against Syracuse, where he had 15 targets, 7 receptions, 87 yards, and a touchdown in that game for a total of 18.2 fantasy points there. My initial thought here when Iomanure came up as an option for this was me thinking, looking at these targets, right, he's getting the opportunity here. 12 targets versus TCU, 4 targets versus Cal Poly. Okay, I can let that slide. It was a FCS opponent. They blew out by 34. Against Syracuse, 15 targets. Against Clemson, 8 targets. Against Virginia Tech, 9 targets. Like, he's getting the volume. And so my initial thought was like, all right, maybe they're spreading the ball around even a little bit more, even though, like, on paper, the targets here look great. And I was right on that front. Like, opportunity-wise, Io Manor is doing just fine. Because, like, let's compare Io Manor in 2023 to 2024, right? In 2023, his target share is 26.9%. In 2024, I was expecting it to be lower just based on the fact that he hasn't had as much production. But no, it's actually way higher. He's at 34.0% target share right now. That's one out of every three passes that Stanford has is going towards Io Manor. It doesn't feel that way because he's not getting a ton of receptions or anything, but that's just the honest truth of it. And so my next thought was like, okay, where is he being targeted? Like, maybe he's getting shorter targets. Well, not the case either. Last year, his ADOT was 14.1. This year, he's actually further down the field at 16.7 ADOT. So that's increasing. But we do see a pretty significant drop in terms of yards per catch from last year, from 16.2 down to 13.2 this year. So a whole 3 yards less per catch is yak after receptions gone down from 5.1 to 3.5. So about a yard and a half less per reception, which doesn't sound like a ton, but he isn't. But again, that kind of stuff adds up over time. So then here's the thing that really, really stuck out to me. Last year, Io Manor's reception percentage, which is, you know, number of catches he makes over the number of targets he gets, last year is 58.9%. That has dropped below 50%. Like, it's already a little worrisome when you're getting below 60% reception rate. Granted, again, Io Manor is a downfield target, so, you know, you can let that slide a little bit. But now he's less than 50% this year. There's a very big disconnect going on between the quarterbacks and Io Manor this year, and it's impacting him massively. As I mentioned, his target share is up this year. His targets per game is up this year. Last year, he finished with 107 targets at the end of the year. Currently, as it stands right now, Io Manor is on pace in 12 games, in 12 regular season games, he is on pace for 120 targets. But here's the thing, even though he's getting almost 20 targets more in terms of his pace, he's actually on pace for less receptions because of just how little balls he's actually bringing in. And that's having a massive impact. If you take what he finished with last year, he finished with 63 receptions, 1,022 yards, and 6 touchdowns, which got him to wide receiver 36 last year for CFF purposes. Currently, he's on pace for 120 targets, but for only 57.6 receptions, 761 yards, and 7 touchdowns, which granted more touchdowns than last year, but still that's a whole 250 yards less than last year. That's a big, big problem for Io Manor moving forward. So I guess the question is, like, how do I rate this? Well, I actually have him the lowest of our group. I have him at a 5. Nate and Chris are higher. They're at 7 and 8 respectively, which, by the way, if I didn't cover this at the beginning, just real quick, the scale is from 1 to 10. 10 being just drop them, don't worry about it. 1 is start them with confidence, don't worry about it. Meanwhile, 3 is like monitor closely. 5 is look for backup plan, as in like grab a person in the same position off the waiver wire just in case this continues to go south. 8 is bench them now. There's no way they can enter your starting lineup. I'm definitively in the look for backup plan. I'll be real, I could probably move this to a 6 because, as I mentioned before, like, there's a big problem with production here, right? His pace does not constitute a startable wide receiver moving forward if he's on pace to only finish with just over 750 yards here. But there are things that give me hope. One, that 120 target pace is very much elite in my mind. Any wide receiver that is on pace for that is a startable option in my mind for CFF purposes, especially in a PPR league. The problem is we got to get that reception percentage up. 48.0% is not going to cut it moving forward. And the thing I don't like is that with Justin Lamson being the starting quarterback, at least for the foreseeable future for Stanford, I'm not sure that gets much better because his completion percentage is only 54.5%. And you get Io Manor being a downfield target. That just means in general, you're going to see a lower percent, a completion percentage than what your quarterback's throwing, because logically, throwing farther down the field is harder to connect. And so that is a very, very big concern there for me with him. And again, the thing that kind of makes me feel a little bit better is that for all of Stanford having issues on offense, and they do have a lot of issues on offense, I do actually really like the second half of their schedule, right? This is first week against Notre Dame sucks. Don't get me wrong on that. But after that, SMU, Wake Forest, NC State, Louisville, Cal, San Jose. I'm not saying Stanford's offense and passing game will get fixed in that time, but say Justin Lampson does take a step forward. Say the coaching staff actually gets it through their thick skull that Elijah Brown, the true freshman there, actually gives them probably the best chance to win games. That's a very much a schedule they can start taking advantage of down the line. So I'm not at a point where I'm dropping Io Manor. I'm definitely looking at some wide receivers on the waiver wire to get him, to take care of him if things continue to go south here. But overall, I'm a little less afraid of Io Manor moving forward than probably some of you were expecting. Again, the graphic says 5. I'm probably up to a 6, but I'm not like freaking out over this. Jalen Buckley, I think, is a little bit of a different story here. Jalen Buckley has been a pain in my backside the last couple of weeks, not because of, you know, just him being injured. Lots of players do that, but like, again, people keep asking me if I know anything about what's going on with Jalen Buckley, and I'm telling you guys, it's a Mac school. It's hard. It like trying to get information out of them is like trying to pull teeth. Okay, like it's just not happening a lot of times. And unfortunately, with Jalen Buckley, they felt very incentivized to keep hush hush about him as much as possible. And the one thing I'm quickly realizing is I'm very annoyed with Western Michigan's, even though they're required to put out injury reports, it still feels like that they are just not very forthcoming on that kind of stuff at all. And so, anyway, back to Buckley here. We've seen him twice this year. We saw him once against Wisconsin, where he actually had a pretty serviceable day. 16 carries, 64 yards, and 2 touchdowns, 21.3 fantasy points. That's great. This past week is the first time we've seen him since then. And he came in 11 carries, 48 yards, and that was it. Meanwhile, Jaden Nixon went off again. Jaden Nixon's a big problem for Jalen Buckley. Jaden Nixon, for those of you who don't know, is a transfer coming over from Oklahoma State. And quite frankly, as much as I like Jalen Buckley, I like the homegrown talent in the MAC. Like, Jaden Nixon is a guy that played at Oklahoma State for years, transferred out, very much was looking for a spot where he can spend one last year and ball out a little bit. And he has been doing that for Western Michigan. He is clearly the better running back, in my opinion. You look at what he has done over the last couple of weeks since Buckley went down. He performed terribly against Ohio State, but no shame in that. Lots of players performed poorly against Ohio State. Me and asked Caleb Johnson this past week for the most part. But then after that, against Bethune-Cookman, 17 carries, 189 yards and 2 touchdowns. Against Marshall, 23 carries, 146 yards and a touchdown. Against Ball State last week, 14 carries, 124 yards and 3 touchdowns. He is averaging over 6 yards a carry in all 3 games. He was averaging almost 9 yards a carry versus Ball State and over 11 yards per carry versus Bethune-Cookman. He is just straight up better than a lot of the competition he is facing right now. And if Western Michigan knows what they're doing, I don't see how they take him off the field. Which means Buckley, yeah, he's going to get rotated in just like he did this past week, right? Where there's actually almost a dead even split between the two of them here, where Nixon got 14 carries, Buckley got 11 carries. But I'm just telling you right now, every time Nixon touched that ball compared to Buckley, the difference was clear. If the staff understands what they're doing, they're probably going to continue to go back to having Nixon get a larger majority of those touches moving forward. Now, Buckley's still going to get rotated in, and that's going to hurt Nixon a little bit compared to what he was doing against the likes of Bethune-Cookman and Marshall. But because of Nixon's impact, I have Buckley, at least for redraft purposes, at a 7. Nate's got him at a 7 as well. Chris K's got him at an 8. I don't think personally you can start him right now. I probably should put myself at an 8 here. I try not to freak out too much, but as I'm talking myself through this, like, I'm realizing, like, if I have Buckley in a league, there's no way I'm starting him. There's got to be other ways, because I think he's definitively the RB2 at Western Michigan right now. I think that Nixon, at least for this year, because he's got that 1 year left, he's a Power Four transfer coming in, wrecking whatever competition he has been facing from Western Michigan. I don't know what else to tell you guys. I think Buckley's just going to have to wait a year, probably rest up, heal that injury, whatever is plaguing him, and he tries again next year. So that's my thoughts on our two freakout scale candidates for this week, Alec Iaminor and Jalen Buckley. Let's move on over to our waiver traps for this week. I got a quarterback, three running backs, and one wide receiver. There's actually more guys I probably could have put on here, but one, I don't want to go too long on this segment. You guys know me. But two, like, I really wanted to focus on some of these running backs because, as I've mentioned last couple of weeks with waiver wire pickups, right, we've been kind of desperate for some good running back pickups off the waiver wire. There just haven't really been great options, and so I really want to dispel some of the ones I really think are tempting for people out there and tell you just, no, don't worry about it. So we'll start with our quarterback, though, and that is Javonte McCoy, quarterback out of Oregon State. On paper, there seems to be some intrigue here, right? Like, he's, the last 3 weeks, he's had 50-plus rushing yards in each of his games. This past week, he had 91 rushing yards and three touchdowns in the game against Colorado State. But here's the thing. Oregon State's scoring opportunities for McCoy have been mostly pretty abysmal here, right? He has finished, let's see, one, two, three, three games out of his five so far, he has not scored a single touchdown. Why? Because they got Jam Griffin and Anthony Hankerson back there in that backfield. Why would you run it with your quarterback when you got those two, right? They don't pass the ball a ton, right? He gets an average amount of passes, right? But, like, he hasn't hit over 200 passing yards a single time this year. His yards per attempt basically lives in five to 6 yards per attempt, right? They're not throwing deep passes with McCoy. The passing game is just not the identity of this Oregon State team, and it's working out for them so far. They're 4-1, so, like, I don't fully blame them for doing it, but that's not a recipe for success with McCoy. Yes, he does rush on the ground a little bit, and that does provide himself a nice floor, but when you score 32.98 fantasy points this past week, but in every week before that, you have not scored above 13, I'm not buying it. Oregon State will be right back to where they were next week. This was kind of a weird game where Colorado State played a lot better than I was expecting them to, and it kind of forced Oregon State to play from behind. So maybe that, again, that's the reason why McCoy got up to 28 passing attempts in this game. But even still, like, it wasn't through the passing game that they got back into this game. It was on the ground. So I'm not buying McCoy. Don't worry about him this week. I don't care that he did well. Running back, Hassan Wilson out of Charlotte. I don't know what to do with Charlotte. I don't know what to trust them. It's same with some of the other teams we'll talk about here in a second, where, like, it feels like they're very bad on paper, but every once in a while they just kind of put up these random performances that just make you question everything of, like, all right, are you actually good? Are you, like, or are you just a flash in the pan right now? Charlotte's put up 55 points this past week, and a good chunk of them went to Mr. Hassan Wilson here. 15 carries, 164 yards, and three touchdowns for a total of 34.4 fantasy points. Phenomenal day for Mr. Wilson here. Probably a performance that could earn him more touches in the future. So, again, it's one of those things where I'm telling you that he's waiver trapped right now, and I'm telling you in 2 weeks that, hey, pick him up off the waiver wire. But given the fact that before this game, we have not seen Wilson get above 10 touches in a single game, and we finally see him do it in this game, and he rips off 10 yards a carry, that's an efficiency that I can't rely on. Three touchdowns, one touchdown every five touches. I'm not buying it. I'm not going to go run out and grab Hassan Wilson here. Again, like I said, maybe things get better for him in the coming weeks. Maybe Charlotte kind of figures out, like, hey, maybe we can ride on this guy a little bit. But for right now, I don't want to do it. DJ McKinney, running back out of Sam Houston, is the next guy up here. I had his partner in crime, Jay Ducker, as one of my waiver wire pickups for last week. It hasn't worked out super well, though Ducker did score a touchdown this past week. McKinney, very similarly to Wilson, has had a very pedestrian start up until this point, right? He has not hit above 60 yards rushing in a game. He is highest... His highest touch numbers were 11 versus Hawaii, which is not a very high volume guy. And then suddenly this past week, rips off 138 yards, almost 10 yards a touch, two touchdowns on the ground, when he has not scored a touchdown all year long. And so, again, this screams to me a flash in the pan. He's third in touches for Sam Houston behind Jay Ducker. He's not that far behind Jay Ducker. Again, he's got 57 carries. Ducker's got 66. But both of them are behind Hunter Watson, the quarterback there, at 75 carries. So McKinney is basically the third option when it comes to that goal line. Again, Ducker's got five touchdowns. Watson's got four. McKinney's got two. So he's not even really the main guy that they go to around that goal line. I just see McKinney falling off pretty hard after this week. Good on him for this last week's performance, over 30 points here. But as for me and my house, we will be staying away. Another waiver wire trap to avoid here is Braden Bennett, the running back out of Coastal Carolina. This is a guy that I feel like we in the CFF community have been waiting for a long time to, like, to finally see good production from him. And here's the thing, maybe we do a little bit here, but it's a little hard to tell, right? Braden Bennett played this past week against Coastal Carolina, or played against Old Dominion, excuse me. Ran the ball nine times for 48 yards and two touchdowns. He also had one catch for 37 yards and a touchdown there. Already you're seeing some of my red flags here. He only had 10 touches in this game, and he had three touchdowns. He had, in total, 85 yards, 37 of which came on a singular pass. So, again, a lot of red flags here. But when you look at his history here, right, again, he's been on pace for some pretty good games, right? His efficiency numbers have been fantastic so far. Against Jacksonville State, the first game of the season here, 11 carries, 60 yards, and two touchdowns, a catch for 5 yards there. So he finished that day with 19 fantasy points. And then against William & Mary, again, he didn't have a ton of touches. He had five touches in total for 37 yards and a touchdown. But then he got hurt, right? So then he was out for a couple weeks, comes back and puts up 27 points. So again, that William & Mary game, he was technically on pace for another 19.4 fantasy points. And if he had three games of 19.4 and then 27 fantasy points, I mean, my eyebrows are raised a little bit at that. But it also has the same feel as some of these Navy and Army skill position players, you know, like the likes of like Noah Short and like Heidenreich over at Navy, right? Where, yes, they're putting up fantasy points. Like, there's no doubt about it. They're getting touchdowns, which Braden Bennett's got six touchdowns, in three games. So clearly, like, they're getting ways to find them, to get them into the end zone. But, like, the opportunity numbers just don't make sense. Like, it defies logic of, like, how I normally go about it. I'll throw Braden Bennett in the same category as the likes of, like, Noah Short and, you know, Eli Heidenreich, especially if you're in a non-best ball format here, where I personally am not touching them because that's just not how I roll. I shoot for volume, and it just, that's the kind of stuff that has been successful for me year after year. Every time I do go after a triple option player, especially skill players, that's the week when they start falling off. And so I'm avoiding for the most part, and I'm kind of avoiding it here with Braden Bennett as well. Hopefully we can see Bennett get some more touches down the line. I'd love to see it because Christian Washington has not been the best at times this year. And so maybe Bennett can have a resurgence there. But for right now, I'm avoiding him. Last player here that we'll talk about here is Quentin Skinner, the wide receiver out of Kansas this past week against Arizona State. 10 targets, 6 receptions, 130 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Problem is, before that point, he had scored 6 fantasy points total in 3 games. Skinner very much off to a, or excuse me, he had scored 3, or he has scored 6 fantasy points in the last 3 games. I shouldn't say up until this point in the season, because he had himself a decent start to the season as well. But that's the problem here, right? He had himself a really good start to the season. Then he fell off against UNLV, where only had 1 target, then 3 targets versus West Virginia, then 9 targets versus TCU, but only brought in 2 of them for 16 yards, right? And then now, this past week, he finally puts it all together for 130 yards and 2 touchdowns. I don't think it's completely crazy that maybe Skinner has himself some more good weeks down the line, right? Where, you know, if Luke Grimm gets taken away like he did this past week, really, and Skinner gets opened up there, maybe that happens. But I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend when that happens, right? On paper, in a game where Kansas scored 27 versus TCU, I would expect Skinner to be one of those touchdowns or get more opportunities there. Against West Virginia, where, you know, Kansas had to put up 28 points in that game, we don't see Skinner get any of those opportunities hardly in that game either. So I think that it's a flash in the pan for Skinner. Good on him for a great performance against Arizona State, even though they came up short. I think that Skinner is probably more likely to end next week with 3 targets than he has 10 targets, and for that reason, I'm avoiding him. So those are our waiver wire traps for this week. If y'all ever have a question over whether or not you should be targeting a guy that I did not mention on these week, these weekly waiver traps, I'll tell you in my DMs. You get an @CFF_Jared, just DM me there, or you can leave a comment down below if you're watching this on the YouTube side of things. I can already tell you that some people are going to be asking me about Braylon Braxton over at Marshall, to which I say I'm currently in wait-and-see mode on him. I don't want to make a definitive statement like I am here with these guys that, like, I don't think he's going to be good, because, you know, that is an air raid system, and that is a system that if they can click, I think it can be very good for CFF. So I don't want to write him off completely. But at the same time, App State's defense has been atrocious, and Marshall's offense has left a lot to be desired up until this point in the season. Now, maybe they made a turn last week. Again, they did put up 50 points. An offense that's not working doesn't put up 50 points. I don't care if it's against air, right? So clearly they had something going for them last week, and hopefully they can continue that. I love nothing more than to put Braylon Braxton on next week's waiver wire show. But for right now, I'll move. I'm holding off on him, and I think he'll still be pretty widely available come next week. So with that being said, let's move on to the actual quarterbacks that I am excited to talk to you about. After I take a sip of water, and we will go ahead and get started here. Now, if you're watching this on the YouTube side of things, you'll notice I did something different. No, I did not put the graphics out of order, even though I am prone to do that. I'm going to start with the honorable mentions this week. This is not to downplay the actual guys I'm going to break down here in a few minutes, but I would tell you right now, I'm about to give you some names. We'll dive deep into them, and I like those guys, right? But to me, I would check a lot of these guys that we've talked already about in previous week's episodes. And the four names that really come to mind are Tyler Huff, Haj Malik Williams, Kevin Jennings, and Sawyer Robertson. I try not to list guys over and over again week to week, right? I don't want to bore you guys to death with certain players and let you know, like, hey, this guy was good again this week. But I might as well kind of put it out front here, because Tyler Huff this past week, 43 fantasy points. Haj Malik Williams, not a anomaly. He had 32.38 fantasy points against Syracuse this past week. Kevin Jennings had his best game of the season against Louisville, 28.54 fantasy points there. Sawyer Robertson had another solid week with 24 fantasy points there, right? I would check for all of these guys before I would really start running to some of the other guys that I am mentioning here. That way, again, you'll see when I get to the quarterbacks here. Again, I like them, but to me, guys like Huff, Haj Malik Williams, Kevin Jennings, like those guys are all like a tier above some of the new quarterbacks that I'll be mentioning this week. So double check that those guys aren't available first in your league before you move on to some of these other guys. Now, with that being said, let's move on to my first official new quarterback play of the week, and that is Spencer Petras, quarterback out of Utah State, rostered on 4% of leagues this past week. He went 27 for 41 for 372 yards and 3 touchdowns. Also had 6 rushing attempts for 7 yards there. Petras is a guy that I think his story is not over yet here, right? When Blake Anderson was relieved of duty close to the start of the season, we kind of knew that there was going to be some growing pains for this Utah State offense, right? Despite the fact that they, you know, kept on the staff, tried to keep as much things the same system-wise as they were last year, right? But then Petras went down in the first game against Robert Morris here, right? Again, he had 15 passes in that game for 147 yards and a touchdown. He was obliterating them despite he had two interceptions, I believe. Yeah, he did two interceptions, which obviously wasn't great, right? But then he goes down with injury, and then this offense puts out Bryson Barnes. And I don't know if you guys really know this, but Spencer Petras and Bryson Barnes are two very different quarterbacks. And so this offense didn't quite run the same without him. And now Petras is back. We've seen him for 2 weeks, right? Again, one against Temple, one against Boise. And to me, these results have been pretty encouraging for CFF purposes so far, right? Against Temple, he finished the game with 19.52 fantasy points, which you might be saying to me like, oh, Jared, that doesn't really sound great. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot to be left desired on the touchdown front there. You know, he had two touchdowns, but he did throw 44 times for 293 yards in that game. So there is a pretty solid floor to build upon just based on that, right? Like, yeah, he only had two touchdowns in the game, but if he finished with three, four touchdowns in that game, especially playing from behind like that, right, suddenly you're not as critical of that performance as maybe you would be, right? And that's the exact same. That's the exact scenario we got this past week with Boise State, right? Once again, 40-plus pass attempts, 372 yards this time, and three touchdowns, finishing the game with 27.58 fantasy points. He's not a runner, but as I've kind of mentioned here, he's had 40-plus passing attempts in each of the last 2 weeks, the games where he's played a full amount, and that, to me, can make up some of the lack of rushing that we can get with some other quarterbacks, especially if we can kind of expect 300 yards on average with him each week. That makes for a really good floor play for CFF purposes. It also helps that Utah State's defense should make sure that Petras will always be playing from behind. They're absolutely atrocious. Speaking of atrocious and Mountain West play, Petras's upcoming schedule is gorgeous, right? You get UNLV up next. They're 98th versus the pass. New Mexico, they're 109th versus the pass. And Wyoming's 95th versus the pass. As far as I'm concerned, Spencer Petras, despite the fact that he is mostly a pocket passer quarterback, he might be, in my opinion, one of the better bets to just assume 300 to 350 yards of passing from him every single week from each of the next 3 weeks, because everything's kind of perfectly brewing for him to have himself a really nice stretch here, and he will make a phenomenal floor play for those of you who are struggling at the quarterback position. And in a six-point passing touchdown, like, to me, he's a no-brainer. So next up, let's talk about Mr. Brendan Lewis, the quarterback out of Nevada, rostered on 22% of leagues this past week. 30 pass attempts for 22 completions for 213 yards and two touchdowns through the air. He also had 13 attempts for 90 yards and two touchdowns on the ground, finishing the day with 37.52 fantasy points in four-point passing touchdown leagues. I've been putting this off for about as long as I could, because Lewis has been doing great really since the start of the season. Brandon Lewis is a legitimate option for CFF purposes, and I can't believe I just typed those words into existence, because I had no trust at all in this Nevada team coming into the season. And I'll be real, they keep proving me wrong over and over and over again. I very much underestimated the hire of Matt Lubick as the offensive coordinator here. He was formerly the offensive coordinator there at Kansas. He's been a pretty major catalyst for this offense, going beyond really anything that I could have ever expected. I very much left Nevada's offense just completely in the dust. I never considered drafting anybody out of here, even though we kind of knew that Lewis was a dual threat quarterback. Well, again, he has been absolutely great. Despite, you know, only one major stumble versus Minnesota, Lewis has actually been arguably one of the more consistent quarterbacks for CFF purposes. Over the last 4 weeks, we've seen three 20-point games from Lewis, two of which have hit 30-plus. Like a lot of quarterbacks with this skill set, his passing kind of leaves something to be desired, as he hasn't hit 250 yards since week two. But again, his legs, pretty much the opposite of Petras here, his legs more than make up for the lack of passing here. He's hit 60-plus rushing yards against every G5 opponent he has faced so far. And much like Petras, Lewis is going to continue to benefit from a very soft Mountain West schedule. Again, they are not playing defense out West, and it is glorious for our CFF purposes. I will admit, though, that compared to Petrus, Lewis's upcoming matchups are not nearly as great. They got Oregon State, you got Fresno. Hawaii should be pretty solid, but again, that immediate schedule of Oregon State and Fresno State, definitely not good. But regardless, you got a dual threat Mountain West quarterback here. He's shown the ability to play some really good hero ball in a shootout. That's going to be a really nice quarterback to roster in CFFs if you are struggling to find some guys to plug in at quarterback. So that's Brendan Lewis. Let's move on to our third quarterback here, Mr. Zion Chris, the quarterback out of Houston, formerly of Louisiana. This past week, 18 pass attempts, 15 completions for 141 yards and a touchdown. He also ran the ball 11 times for 97 yards and a touchdown here. Much like Nevada, I had left the Houston offense for dead. And this past week, it has been revitalized, at least somewhat here, with Zion Chris now at quarterback, with potential first-round quarterback Donovan Smith going down. The Cougars have given Chris a chance here, a shot at the starting job, and quite frankly, it's head-scratching why the staff hasn't made this change to this point. Now, you know, I think there's a decent shot that TCU's defense was just completely unprepared for this possibility, excuse me. And so that's part of the reason why Chris had so much success here. Because even still, like I mentioned, Chris's passing was pretty pedestrian, 141 yards and a touchdown there. But Chris's game with his legs is definitely something that I think took the TCU defense off guard and absolutely gave Houston's offense a spark. Already in game one, Chris has surpassed Donovan Smith's rushing total for the year. And what's even nicer is that we know that this isn't really a fluke with Chris, right? He did it back in Louisiana. The staff already this year has made tons of packages for Chris to run the ball in. Going forward, if they do stick with Chris as the starting quarterback here, I do like some of the potential that he brings for this offense. And since we know that nothing else is really working for this offense, I think that means that Chris should remain a pretty solid catalyst for this offense to continue to run through, which is always a recipe for good CFF success down the road. My only main thing is I still don't think Houston's a very good team. So we'll see how it goes. He's on bye this week. He gets Kansas after that, and then Utah comes to town. So tough matchup there with Utah, but I think we'll quickly figure out if Chris is legit or not. Last quarterback here that I'm going to throw out here is a guy that, I'll be real, I wasn't super confident to name him here, but I can't ignore what he did here against Coastal Carolina last week. Colton Joseph, quarterback out of Old Dominion, by the way, is the person I'm talking about here. I just realized I never said his name. He's rostered on 0% of leagues. He had 40 passing attempts, 22 completions, 262 yards and three touchdowns this past week. He also had 12 rushing attempts for 68 yards and a touchdown, finishing the game with 35.28 fantasy points in 4-point passing touchdown leagues. And Colton Joseph, good sir, I don't know where you've been, but Old Dominion has been desperately needing a quarterback like you for a good bit. Now, granted, again, his completion percentage was 55%. So, like, we're not talking about a guy that was just wheeling and dealing all over the place. Again, he finished with 6.5 yards per attempt. Like, we're not talking about a guy that was just, you know, lighting the world on fire here. But regardless, again, very, very nice performance here. Again, four touchdowns. He's hit 60 rushing yards in each of his last two games. He did come in versus versus Bowling Green, and again, did not do very well passing the ball. But again, in his limited time, did also get 65 rushing yards as well. So it's pretty clear that Joseph is a dual threat quarterback moving forward. And if he stays as the dual threat, as the starting quarterback for Old Dominion, I really like the schedule coming up again. Georgia State, Texas State, Georgia Southern. On paper, there's a lot to like here. I am a little concerned that this is a fluke. He was very much almost a guy that I put in for my waiver wire traps for this week, given the fact that I don't really trust Old Dominion's offense a ton right now. But I'm willing to give Joseph the benefit of the doubt because, again, the one time we've seen him twice, right? One time was against Bowling Green where he ran the ball 9 times, 65 yards in limited action. So that's obviously really nice to see. And then this past week where he was in a shootout against Coastal Carolina and he performed pretty solidly outside of, that completion percentage. So I think Joseph, if he stays the starting quarterback for Old Dominion, might be worth a continuous look at. Probably in most leagues, I would have him be a watchlist guy rather than a waiver guy. But if you're in a super deep league and you need quarterbacks, I think you can do worse than Joseph. So that being said, that's all the quarterbacks I have for this week. Only doing 4 this week. Like I mentioned, most of the value that you are going to be finding is going to be in those quarterbacks that I've mentioned in previous weeks. So that being said, sip of water time, and then we'll get into the running backs. All right. First guy up here is Mr. Trey Stewart, running back out of Jacksonville State, rostered on 6% of rosters. He had 24 rushing attempts with 134 yards and 4 touchdowns this past week for the Gamecocks against my Kennesaw State Owls. Oh, poor Owls. They got absolutely obliterated this past week. For those of you, if you can't tell, that stat line is definitely something much, much better than what we've been getting out of the running backs off waiver wires the last couple of weeks. If you've been following me the last couple of weeks, there's not been a ton of great options. I think the Stewart is a complete breath of fresh air here. I think he's a completely legitimate grab for the waiver for your teams moving forward. If you've been struggling at running back, I think he's a must-have this week. When Jacksonville State lost Ron Wiggins to injury for the year, it took a while for Stewart to kind of get there, right? Again, I think Jacksonville State first was kind of trying Anwar Lewis. He's a prime candidate. He's a veteran of the program, right? Maybe we get him going. I think Andrew Paul was considered at one point, but I think that lasted all of 5 minutes. Neither of them took advantage of the opportunities, and Trey Stewart just straight up has, right? Not only is he a lead back for this Gamecocks offense, he is right now acting as if he's an undisputed workhorse, right? He's been building his momentum for this role the last couple of weeks. He started out as part of a committee. Then around 3 weeks ago against Eastern Michigan, we kind of saw our first look at, Stewart being used as a workhorse. He has 17 carries for 53 yards and a touchdown against the Eagles in that game, which isn't the most inspiring stat line of all time, but, it was an indicator that the staff moving forward was going to be relying on him quite a bit more. And then he followed that up with a 16 carry, 96 yards game and 2 touchdowns for Southern Miss. That in and of itself probably should have landed him on people's waiver wire list last week, myself guilty as well. But again, I saw it, but I saw 16 and 17, and for some reason I was like, not quite there yet. Like I have a feeling that this is only, like, this is fluky. Like, he'll come back down a little bit here. But then he shut me the hell up, right? This past week, he had the mother of all games, 24 carries, 134 yards, and 4 touchdowns, as I mentioned before. I think the staff has made it crystal clear. Trey Stewart is your number one running back for the Rich Rodriguez offensive system moving forward. And given his trajectory, I wouldn't be surprised if he has some more monster games down the stretch. The one concern I do have with him, though, is that he has a very distinct lack of receiving work so far, which indicates that, if Jacksonville were to fall behind game script wise, Stewart would get hurt a ton. Granted, that's not to say he can't provide receiving productions. We just haven't really seen it yet. So regardless, it's very rare to find a guy that is working his way up to 20 plus touches in a game this late in the season. You have to go with Trey Stewart if you're struggling at running back, in my opinion. And he is in the same tier as the other running back option here that I will talk about here next. That is Tawie Walker, running back out of Wisconsin. Walker and Stewart, to me, are like a clear tier above everybody else in the running back list for today. I think that these are the kind of guys that you were really looking to pick up earlier in the offseason. And now we're just kind of getting lucky that they're popping up now because of certain circumstances. Regardless, let's talk more about Walker here. Walker, the running back out of Wisconsin, rostered on 17% of rosters this past week, 19 carries, 94 yards, and 3 touchdowns against Purdue. Walker is kind of not coming out of nowhere, because we all knew, like, transferring from Oklahoma to Wisconsin, like, okay, this is a nice spot for Walker. They got Ches Malusi there, right? But, you know, he should be able to do pretty solid. Malusi moves on after this year. Walker could be a monster for Wisconsin next year, right? Well, we're kind of getting that a little early now, because earlier this week, we got the news that Ches Malusi is departing from the Badgers program this past week. There's a lot of speculation as to, like, what's involved there, whether it's, you know, him, or his official statement is that he is taking time away from the team in order to rehab injuries. There's a lot of talk that he is, like many others, saving his final red shirt in order to be able to transfer to a different spot next year. Right. Regardless of whatever's going on, Malusi's departure has opened up the opportunity for Tobby Walker to have some really big upside moving forward. Right. Walker and Malusi so far this year have been operating as a 1A, 1B for the Badgers. And when both of them, at least when both of them are healthy. Right. Now, with Malusi not there to pair with him, Walker has a clear is the clear top option for the Badgers. And we saw that this past weekend versus Purdue, right, where Walker got 19 carries for 94 yards and 3 touchdowns versus the next back, I believe, only had 6 to 8 carries, somewhere around there, right? And that was Dupree, the true freshman. Walker is the most experienced back in this backfield right now. He is somebody that I think absolutely can be penciled in for about 20 touches per game moving forward. I think he would have gotten even more this past week if, you know, this wasn't a blowout on Wisconsin's side, 52-6, right? I can absolutely see him getting upwards of 25 carries. We know that Phil Longo is not shy about having a bell cow back, and Walker, to me, looks primed to be his next one. So, a lot of things going Walker's way. And if you're in a league with me, you most likely are not going to be able to grab Walker, because I grabbed him last week. The moment I saw Malusi come up, like the Malusi news come out, I was all out there grabbing Walker in as many leagues as I could. Regardless, Walker, unlike Stewart, Stewart has a nice schedule moving forward, by the way. I should have mentioned, right? He's got New Mexico State, he's got Middle Tennessee in 2 out of his next 3 weeks. But Walker, not as great, right? You get Rutgers, or you go on the road to Rutgers, on the road to Northwestern, which, again, I don't think either one of those are the toughest matchups in the world, but they will be low-scoring games, and it's on the road, and both of those defenses can be a little stout there, so I don't love that. And then the week after, they get Penn State. Granted, it's at home, but I don't love that matchup there as well. But regardless, Stewart and Walker, to me, are the clear top two gets at running back right now. I think that they are worth heavily, heavily prioritizing. Not to say that the next group of running backs here aren't great here, just a little bit more nuanced in the what you can kind of expect here. My next running back here is Avery Morrow, running back out of Colorado, rostered on 8% of rosters this past week, rushed for 25 attempts, 140 yards and a touchdown there. He also caught the ball 3 times for 20 yards, so finishing the day with 160 yards from scrimmage. I've been burned once by this backfield already earlier this offseason when I had Justin Marshall as one of my top options off the waiver wire in week one, because he had 25 carries versus Texas, and I'm like, all right, that means that he's totally going to be somebody that the staff's going to rely on down the stretch. That is not the case. Marshall has been very up and down so far, and Morrow, the last 2 weeks, has been the bell cow back for this offense, right? Against UTEP, 21 carries, 156 yards, and 2 touchdowns in that game. So we got back-to-back weeks here where Avery Morrow's finished with 23-plus fantasy points, and he's got himself a really nice schedule moving forward. We got San Jose State, we got Air Force, we got New Mexico. All three of those are games in which that if Morrow continues to do what he's done the last couple of weeks, ain't no reason why we can't expect him to continue this dominant stretch. My only thing is that I'm very, very concerned about, you know, what is the staff going to do? Like, is this a hot hand situation? Is this just Morrow getting 2 hot hand games in a row? And next week it could very well be all of a sudden that, you know, Kobe Johnson takes off as the lead back, or just it goes back to Justin Marshall. I'm a little concerned here. Morrow is absolutely a guy that I'm grabbing off the waiver wire if I need running back help, but I'm probably keeping him on the bench for at least 1 week just to kind of gauge out what things are going with here in the near future. But regardless of anything else, obviously Morrow's, like, the volume here is too much to ignore. He has, again, 28 touches last week, 23 the week before, right? You're not finding running backs just lying around out here on the waiver wire that can get you that kind of volume, just even the potential of it off the waiver wire. And so to me, that's what makes Avery Morrow a ad for this week. Again, temper expectations a little bit moving forward. Start him if you have to, but I think it's just better for you to grab him, stick him on your roster, and just keep a close eye on him over the next couple of weeks. And that's really the theme of all three of these last three running backs. And so we'll move on to my next one here, and that is Jalen Jackson, running back out of Iowa State, rostered on 1% of leagues. This past week, 15 carries, 107 yards, and 2 touchdowns on the ground. Did not get any receiving help here. Again, I'm going with something a little different here with Jalen Jackson. Normally, when I recommend players on this pod, right, I go for guys who I think are immediate impacts in one way or another, right? Either it's just short-term, like, you know, they got a really good matchup this week, grab them, play them, dump them next week, right? Or, and this is what I try to go for mostly, is guys that are immediate impacts and their long-term investments, right? Like guys that you can see having on your roster the rest of the year. But again, having that short and long-term impact. However, with Jackson, I'm going somewhere a little different where I don't necessarily think there's going to be immediate impact here with Jalen Jackson. But I think he still strikes me as a value because I do actually believe in the long-term value here, right? Like, let's take a look at this Iowa backfield, or Iowa State, excuse me, backfield here, right? First and foremost, Abusama Dream's dead, at least for this year, right? He's been awful. Even in his better games, he's inconsistent at best. And the Iowa State coaching staff is starting to see what we've seen in the CFF community for a while now, and this past week, Abusama was actually downgraded to RB3. And that is very, very unfortunate for him. But one man's fall is another man's opportunity to rise, and Jalen Jackson's absolutely taken that opportunity here. He stepped up in a big way for the Cyclones the last couple of weeks. Over the past 4 weeks, Jackson has provided some consistency on offense that has been needed from the running back position, right? And it's been very, very good. You know, averaging 5.3 yards per carry, 6.9 yards per carry, and 7.1 yards per carry over the last 3 weeks. All of this culminated in a fantastic performance this past week against Baylor. Like I mentioned, 170 yards and 2 touchdowns, right? So why am I viewing this as an investment play rather than like a full play, right? You might be sitting there thinking to me like, Jerry, like, well, if you think he's the Iowa State RB here, why are you not making this a full play? Like, grab him, start him, and everything like that, right? Despite his solid production the last couple of weeks, he hasn't really earned that full workhorse role yet, right? Abusama still gets some carries, right? Carson Hansen's another running back that's absolutely in the mix here, and he's been performing well in his own right. He had almost 100 yards this past week as well with 15 carries, which is the exact same amount of carries as Jalen Jackson, right? But we do know that Matt Campbell, what he can do with the top running back once he finds this guy, right? If you don't know, ask some of your CFF veteran friends here, right, who, you know, had Breece Hall, David Montgomery back just even a few years ago. If Jackson kind of continues his trajectory, right, where he's kind of continuing on this upswing, if Carson Hansen fades a little bit here, right, Abusama continues to suck wind, and Jackson is kind of the only man left here, we know how incredible that can be. And so, like, I think the upside here is just kind of too tantalizing to leave on the waiver wire. I think you invest now. Go ahead and grab him now, unless you have, like, almost no bench spots, right? I think he's worth stashing on your bench for just a couple of weeks to see where this trajectory at Iowa State kind of takes him. If it's still a committee after the next couple of weeks, bada bing, bada boom, drop him, no harm, no foul. But I think that with Jackson potentially becoming, you know, the next Breece Hall or David Montgomery, obviously probably not as talented as those guys, but even so, just getting those opportunities, I think he's absolutely worth grabbing off the waiver wire. And last but not least, at the running back position, Isaac Brown, running back out of Louisville, rostered on 11% of rosters, had 10 rushing attempts, 117 yards, and no touchdowns on the ground last week. Also had 5 receptions for 44 yards. Once again, very much a production profile that you're probably sitting there looking at me being like, Jared, this is not your normal deal. And I would tell you, yes, you're kind of right, because over the last couple of weeks, he's had 10 catches. He's had He's had 10 touches, 4 touches, 17 touches, and then 15 touches this past week. Now, as you kind of noticed there, his touch opportunity is going up here, right? 17 and 15 touches each of the last 2 weeks here. Mostly because, again, it's pretty clear that Isaac Brown, even as a true freshman, is probably the best running back on this roster, right? He has been phenomenal. 5.5 yards per rush against Notre Dame, a pretty stout defense there. And then this past week against SMU, he was averaging over 11 yards per carry, right? What I also love about Brown is that he doesn't need really a game script to really get, I mean, he kind of, granted, they were playing from behind against Notre Dame and SMU at times, but regardless, there are close enough games where I still believe that Brown is going to get receptions as part of the game plan, right? He's been very effective through the year. Again, 5.8 yards per reception, 8.8 yards per reception in each of his last two games here. Again, he is a freshman, so there's going to be some ups and downs here, right? But given the fact that he just seems to have a nose for production right now, and I like Louisville's schedule coming up here. They get Virginia, they get Miami, they get Boston College. Those are all teams that Louisville absolutely can take advantage of in the next couple of weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if we see this freshman, even though it's been mostly a committee for Louisville so far, I wouldn't be surprised if Brown ends up becoming the lead back for Louisville by the end of this year. And I'm not saying it's going to be Jawar Jordan levels, but I'm not saying it's impossible. So very much another case of I'm willing to grab Isaac Brown now and hold on to him for a week or two just to see where this trajectory goes with him. And if he quickly bounces up into, 18 to 20 to 22 touches in a single game, boy, oh boy, you've struck gold. I think he's going to be absolutely incredible. So that's it for running backs. We still got wide receivers. We still got tight ends. Y'all hold on here just a second. If I had ads to play, these would be wonderful times for me to insert them. But you guys are just going to have to deal with a few seconds of silence while I take a sip of water. All right. Here we go. Wide receivers. Last couple of weeks have been pretty solid for wide receivers in terms of the waiver wire. And this week, it's not a bad week per se, but it definitely, to give you an idea, as I was writing down names for wide receivers this week, I was putting a question mark beside every single name. Because none of these guys are as stout as I really want them to be in terms of a waiver wire pickup. But again, we're getting later in the season. There's going to be warts on all of these guys' production profiles. Otherwise, they would have already been picked up for CFF purposes at this point in the year, right? Every one of these guys is going to have their vices. But that isn't to say that there isn't some pretty insane upside here. And particularly with the first three guys I'll be discussing, right? There's going to be a theme of really mistaken identity. And what I mean by that is we have some systems in CFF that we kind of know we like, but we weren't entirely sure who the guy was going to be, right? And we either, during the preseason or even during the season a little bit, when we think we had things figured out, now we're having to pivot to another guy because it turns out we didn't have that all that right. So that's where I think there's still some value here, because if you're willing to go out and roll the dice so that these guys are the legitimate guys moving forward, then you're getting some value off the waiver wire right now. So with that being said, let's get started with our first guy here, Javon Tracy, wide receiver out of Miami of Ohio, rostered on 6% of leagues. This past week, he saw 12 targets for 10 receptions, 119 yards, and a touchdown. Again, just going back a few weeks, man, I thought I was convinced I'd found the next Jack Sorensen / Mack Hippenhammer when Cade McDonald began to first emerge. While McDonald still kind of has the eyes of Brett Gabbert, right? He's still involved in the game plan. He had 13 targets this past week. His performances just have not been great since the first couple of weeks, right? First couple of weeks of the season, he had 100 plus yards in each of his games. Since then, McDonald hasn't been able to break 60 yards. I was so convinced that I'm like, all right, this guy's a shoe-in for, a crap load of targets, basically 100 yards every single week and everything. That's my hubris speaking. I learned my lesson on that. Meanwhile, the receiver who has been putting up some production recently is Javon Tracy. Tracy's been opposite of McDonald. So far, his trajectory has kind of been on an upward trend since week two. He started off the season with, about 3-4 targets per game. That quickly rose to about 7, and then he got 12 targets this pass game. And so, obviously, as I mentioned before, the stat line he put up was nice. Again, 119 yards and a touchdown. Very hip and hammer-like line of production. And as we get into Mac play, I do think things are going to kind of sort themselves out a little bit with Tracy and McDonald. But if you're going to ask me who am I going to bet on between the two, I think I'm going to bet on Tracy a little bit here, right? He's younger. He's been kind of working his way up. Things have only gotten better since the season's began. I think that's a better place to kind of put your bets on when it comes to this Red Hawks offense moving forward than a guy like McDonald, who's a senior, right? We kind of know what we can get out of him. And, you know, he's on the downward trend, which is very unfortunate. Tracy's got a nice upcoming schedule here. Eastern Michigan, Ohio, Central Michigan, right? Plenty of opportunities for us to see over the next couple of weeks if Tracy's very legit for this offense moving forward. So that being said, let's move on to our second wide receiver here, a guy that I got to eat some crow on, and I feel ashamed because he's a former Georgia player. But Jaxon Meeks, wide receiver out of Syracuse, I labeled him as a waiver wire trap last week, and boy, oh boy, did he come out and prove me wrong. Not the most insane stat line in the world, but like it's still clearly that, you know what, I'll get into it. Like, if you guys have been listening to me all year, right, I've paid more attention probably to the Syracuse offense, probably more than any other CFF analyst during the summer, probably to a pretty unhealthy degree. Like, I was constantly reading up on reports here and listening to different interviews and stuff like that. I don't know why. I just really gravitated towards this offense here. And through the interviews that I listened, especially with Kyle McCord, it was pretty clear that he needed two things to really feel comfortable in this passing game. One was a reliable slot receiver, which he has in Trebor Pena. He also has that in Ronde Gadsden, right? The other was a big play outside guy that he could really rely on. Based on interviews, though, I had assumed that that was going to be Georgia transfer Zeed Haynes, right? That was who McCord always brought up in interviews. That was who the staff could not stop praising. He was the spring MVP. But unfortunately, Haynes got banged up in week one. He got taken out week two, and he hasn't been back since. And so in his place, his partner in crime coming over from Georgia, Jaxon Meeks, has stepped up. And I just realized, I don't think I ever said Jaxon Meeks' name up until this point. Well, actually, no, I didn't. Well, I said it now, and we're moving on. Because I shouldn't wait on those things. Regardless, right? Jaxon Meeks steps up, and while it kind of took a while for McCord and Meeks to establish some kind of connection, you know, Meeks was not part of the starting four wide receivers that McCord got extended reps with in practice. Last 2 weeks, it made it pretty clear that these two have made that connection, right? McCord has sought out Meeks 11-plus times each of their last two games for a total of 18 catches, 228 yards, and two touchdowns. As long as Zeed Haynes remains out, Meeks, I think, shall remain McCord's top outside option, which so far has been a very, very good spot for some big play potential moving forward. And even if Haynes comes back, and I love Zeed Haynes, he was the guy that I was touting all offseason as the guy to target in this offense. Even if he comes back, given how Meeks has been playing the last couple of weeks, I'm not so sure McCord or this coaching staff will want Meeks off the field given how well he's performed. If anything, it might hurt Hatcher, but could be that Haynes just has to wait another year. So I like Jaxon Meeks moving forward. Again, I think I was a little quick to judge the fact that he wasn't going to be McCord's top option moving forward. But guess what? It's pretty clear between the last couple of games that they have found a really, really good connection. So Meeks is absolutely worth picking up in CFF leagues. Let's move on to our third wide receiver here. And that is Mr. Trek Kekahuna, wide receiver out of Wisconsin, rostered on 6% of rosters this past week. 9 targets, 6 receptions, 134 yards, and 2 touchdowns. One of the biggest whiffs I've had this year was my love for one Will Pauling. After an incredible finish in 2023, Pauling was performing at a potentially elite CFF level. I was ready for the sequel. I fully believed in Pauling as the starting slot option for Phil Longo, which is like one of the most lucrative positions you can go after in CFF every single year. And since then, Luke Fickell has made it his mission to try to get less targets to Pauling. It's massively handicapped Pauling CFF production. It just things have not gone Pauling's way. It doesn't help that, you know, Pauling hasn't performed well this year. Again, his average production per catch has also taken a hit. He's taken 2 whole yards less per catch than last year. That is, like I said, it doesn't sound like much, but adds up greatly over time. And then this past week, right, Pauling took a big hit. He was sidelined the rest of the game. We don't really know his status moving forward. And in the wake of Pauling's injury, Treka Kahuna has emerged. And to say he took advantage of this opportunity would be an understatement, right? He finished today, like I said, 9 targets, 6 catches, 134 yards, and 2 touchdowns, which is better than any stat line that Will Pauling has put up this year. As much as I've liked Pauling, just based on this performance, kind of whispers this offseason, like, Kekahuna just seems to be a much better, more talented wide receiver. And when he's out there, he kind of proves himself, right? So we'll have to keep an eye on the situation, kind of figure out what's going on with Will Pauling. But right now, Kekahuna, just in this one game, has acted more like a Phil Longo slot than Pauling has all year long. And if he can kind of continue this production, I don't think there's a way Pauling comes back and retakes his spot there. So we'll see. Wisconsin does, like I mentioned with Tali Walker, right? They get Rutgers, they get Northwestern, they get Penn State, right? I don't love that schedule up and coming, but I think we'll find out pretty quickly if Kekahuna is here to stay. Regardless, very similar to some of the running backs I had there, right? Just worth picking up, stashing on a bench if you have the room, just to see how things play out over the next couple of weeks. So let's move on to our next wide receiver, and that is Jaden Williams, wide receiver out of Texas State. Rostered on 12% of leagues. If you read Dwight Peoples' article last week for Waiver Wire, who he stepped in for me last week, if you guys did not know, hopefully you enjoyed his Waiver Wire article there. He actually had Jaden Williams labeled as one of his official plays. I had him labeled as an honorable mention. This week I'm making him an official play, even though he actually had one of the more pedestrian stat lines of his year so far this past week. Again, 6 targets, 5 receptions, 73 yards, and a touchdown. But to me, right, like this Texas State offense, much to our chagrin as CFF players, is no longer a two-headed monster at the wide receiver position. It is pretty clearly that Jaden Williams has entered that same realm as Joey Hobert and Cole Wilson at the very least. Hopper still might be the number one guy, but Williams and Wilson are basically right in line with each other. Jaden Williams transferred in from Boston College this offseason. He's been very clearly a big threat for this offense. He's been playing on the outside, and he doesn't need a ton of opportunities in order to have big games, right? He's got 5 touchdowns over the last 5 games. He has hit, you know, 13 plus yards per receptions in each of his last 4 games, right? Very consistent for the most part. I think that if you're okay with, if you're somebody who's okay with still rostering Cole Wilson, you should be okay with rostering Jaden Williams as well. Those guys are basically the same. They got a nice schedule coming up. They get Arkansas State this week, who's been, you know, pretty decent versus the past, but I have a feeling that Texas State's going to want some revenge for last year's absolute drubbing from Arkansas State. So I think Jaden Williams and co will be fine there. And then they get the Old Dominion after that point, and they should be able to go bombs away on the Monarchs there. So Williams is very much kind of like a, it's like when you're playing flyers at the end of your drafts, right? Where you're just kind of throwing guys out there. If they hit, awesome. If they don't, like, it's not the end of the world, right? The upside comes with just throwing him out there. If he works, Williams will be fantastic, right? He has only busted one time this year, and that was against UTSA, and that was the game where, whatever reason, they just absolutely destroyed UTSA, and a lot of their starters came out early. But other than that, he's hit 15-plus fantasy points every single week. Seems like Texas State's going to get him the ball no matter what, so I think he's a pretty safe play, and I like him a lot. So last wide receiver here. Again, I don't love this because I don't love recommending wide receivers out of UMass, but Jacoby James, man, if you're in a PPR league and if you're in looking for somebody that's just getting production every single week for the most part, this is your guy right here, right? Over the last 3 weeks, James has been pretty great. Again, the touchdown opportunities are limited, but that's just the nature of the game when you're playing at UMass. But, you know, 9 targets, 5 catches versus 95 yards versus, you know, Central Connecticut. 8 targets, 4 catches, 150 yards, and a touchdown versus Miami of Ohio. And then this past week, 6 targets, 4 catches, 84 yards, and no touchdowns against Northern Illinois there. I think, again, if you're just looking for steady production week after week, a safe floor guy, I think James has to be on your radar here. Main problem with James, though, is that, man, UMass, I don't know why, like, everybody else has, like, their, like, if you're a G5 team, everybody has your opponents earlier in the season, right? Like, your tough matchups, right? UMass just sticks them right here in the dadgum middle, right? They get Missouri this week, then they got a bye, then they play Wagner, which, you know, that should be fine for James, and then they play Mississippi State, which, granted, gave up, like, 40,000 points to Toledo, but I'm still not trusting UMass to being able to take advantage of any defense, really, at this point, let alone SEC defense, if I can call Mississippi State's defense that. Regardless of anything else, like, I don't love that, you know, UMass has two Power 4 opponents in their next two games. Obviously, things get a little bit better for them because they'll play some MAC teams to finish the season, but regardless, James, very safe floor guy, especially in PPR leagues moving forward, so I'd be okay with him. I don't love it, though. Tight ends. Much like running backs, I've been struggling at tight end the last couple of weeks, and huzzah, I have some honest-to-God true recommendations at tight ends that I can be decently excited about. The first one up here is Taylor Thompson, tight end out of James Madison, rostered in 7% of leagues this past week, 9 targets, 5 catches, 59 yards, did not find the end zone, but do not let that deter you because he had 2 touchdowns over the last 2 weeks before this point. Thompson's offense might be a little Jekyll and Hyde-ish, considering, you know, like, James Madison scored 13 points versus Gardner-Webb, 70 points versus North Carolina, 63 points versus Ball State, and then came out and scored 19 points versus UL Monroe. I'm not going to pretend to understand it. It's going to be annoying as somebody who has Alonzo Barnett in several leagues to try to pretend I know exactly when they're going to pop off every single time. But regardless of anything else, right, Taylor is getting pretty consistent work being provided by the James Madison Dukes here, right? Over the last 3 weeks, he's seen games of 4, 7, and 9 targets. He hasn't found the end zone this past week, but, you know, Thompson is somebody that Barnett is absolutely looking for in the red zone, clearly, based on the volume here. He's also somebody that this offense will rely on to score. He's currently second on the team in targets behind only Cameron Ross. So, again, if you're looking for a tight end, right, it's difficult to find tight ends this late in the game that are this involved in their offense, right? Guys that are, you know, second on their team in targets, right? As long as there's plenty of scoring opportunities, and given how James Madison's offense can be, I think that you can fully expect Thompson to get plenty of scoring opportunities down the line. I think you're potentially looking at a guy that is on track to become a top 10 rest of season tight end option emerging for our eyes. Again, I love the schedule coming up with James Madison. They got Coastal Carolina, Georgia Southern, Southern Miss. Those are all defenses they should be able to take advantage of. And given the pattern of the last 2 weeks, whenever they're scoring a bunch, Thompson finds the end zone. So you got to like your odds there. Other tight end options, I'll go through these guys just a little bit quicker because I don't think that they're as exciting as Thompson. But Dorian Fleming, tight end of Georgia State, man, he is somebody that's pretty exciting as well. 15% rostered this past week, 5 targets, 2 catches, 58 yards, and a touchdown there. Very similar to Thompson. This is a guy that's getting a ton of work at tight end. You just don't really see guys like this that are getting this kind of volume just hanging out on the waiver wires, right? Again, 5, 6, 9, 5 targets each of his last 4 games. Doesn't really have like a ton of yardage to show for it. Again, his high was 68 yards against Georgia Tech back in week, what was that, 1? Back in week 1. So if he doesn't find the end zone, you're in a little bit of trouble there. But I don't think you can really worry about him, you know, being a full-on zero, right? They got a nice schedule coming up. Old Dominion, Marshall, App State, all three. Again, some of these G5 conferences just have atrocious defenses all around. It's going to make for some really, really good CFF matchups moving forward. So I like Fleming moving forward if you're struggling at tight end. And then the last guy that we'll discuss here is Blake Bosma, tight end out of Western Michigan, rostered on 1% of leagues this past week. 7 targets, 7 catches, 57 yards, and a touchdown. 2 weeks in a row that Bosma has found the end zone here, and 2 weeks in a row that he has caught, actually no, 3 weeks in a row that he has caught every ball that has come his way. Again, it's not the most exciting volume in the world, right? Like, both Fleming and Thompson both have much higher volume here, but with this, Bosma is definitely quickly becoming a big part of this passing game for Western Michigan. Like I said, 11 targets, 2 touchdowns over the last 2 weeks. Seems like the offense is absolutely looking for him when they get down in the red zone. And then look at this dadgum schedule moving forward. I don't think you can draw up a bigger dream schedule for a potential MAC player. Looking at this, they get Akron, they get Buffalo, they get Kent State. Those might be the 3 worst MAC teams in a row over the next couple of weeks. If you need a tight end to help bolster yourself over the next 3 weeks, I would absolutely play Bosma every single week and hope you can just find a way to fall into the end zone. So, with that being said, those are my tight ends of the week. Let's move on to our last portion here, and that is our DST streaming options for this week. For those of you who play in leagues with DST option or DST teams, again, it was a little hard at first, but once I kind of settled down, I kind of found some really good ones here. I think Army versus UAB is a really solid play this week. It has the potential to blow up a little bit, but here's the thing I'm banking on with this matchup. When Army's defense is on, they shut down offenses, right? Because of just how much they take off the clock, because of actually how solid their defense is in general. And then their opponent this week is UAB. Trent Dilfer, I don't think, is long for this world at UAB. I think it was a fun hire at first, maybe, just to see kind of how it would go. But in terms of, you know, results since then, this UAB team's just gotten worse each year. And so I think that they're very much in trouble there. And the other thing to kind of note is that when UAB's offense is off, they're really, really off. And so I'm banking on both of those things happening at the same time and Army being able to just completely shut out UAB potentially this weekend. Now, worst case scenario, Army isn't able to keep UAB off the scoreboard, right, and completely shut them down, and UAB is actually able to have a solid offensive day. I still don't think it's going to amount to more than like 17 points, which again isn't the greatest thing to put up against your DST, right? But, you know, there are far worse things that can happen to your DST. So I think Army's a solid play. Toledo's going up against Buffalo this week. Buffalo's an offense that is just completely falling apart as we speak. Again, they lose Nick McMillan, their best wide receiver, for the rest of the year. Ogbonna is a joke of a quarterback for the Buffaloes, or for the Bulls right now, excuse me. Their backfield's a mess right now. Toledo was able to shut down Miami of Ohio for the most part last week, and so I think that defense could do it again against a much worse Buffalo offense moving forward. Illinois is another defense I would be willing to go after. They're the highest rostered defense among the 5 I'm giving you. They're at 36%. So in about 2/3 of leagues, you can still grab Illinois' defense. They're going up against Purdue. Purdue just got absolutely mollywopped by Wisconsin last week. Their offense is a complete joke at this point. Again, they fired Graham Harrell for a reason, and they frankly just didn't look any better last week. I think that Purdue's offense is quite possibly on its way to finishing as the worst Power 4 offense in the country this year, and so I think Illinois is a solid enough defense that they can take advantage of that. And then the last two defenses I'll go ahead and throw out here. These are two teams that I'm wanting to take advantage of here, and that is Wyoming and San Diego State. Just to give you an idea, right? These two offenses, let's see if I can pull it up. We are talking about, let's see, San Diego State is 132nd in the country in offense, and Wyoming is 126. These are two bottom 10 offenses in the country going up against each other, and two pretty solid defenses. And so this is all the makings of an extremely low scoring game between these two. I think that both of these defenses are going to be worth checking out this weekend. So that's my play right there. With all that being said, I think, yeah, that is it, y'all. With that, we have come to the end of our show. Thank you all for listening. If you guys have not already, leave a like, a comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on the YouTube side of things. If you are on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus of Canton podcast network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. You know, Devi, Campus of Canton leagues, Prize Picks, DFS, all that good stuff. We got all of it on that podcast feeds. Regardless of anything else, we'll see you guys back here on Wednesday, where we'll be back to our sit start shows for the week. And for those of you who might get excited, Mr. Justin Leo will be joining us once again. He is back from his month-long moving expedition, and so we will be back up and running with him. It is going to be an absolute blast. Love recording with Justin, aka Volume Pigs, over there. So we will have a great time. Until then, really appreciate you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.